Thank you, Mary, for that beautiful prayer, and I'm so grateful to the prayer chaplains for their prayer support throughout this whole pandemic process. They're amazing, and we appreciate every one of you. Thank you. That was beautiful. So you all may remember that in 2020, we at First Unity set the intention to sail the seven seas together as a compassionate, courageous, contemplative, collaborative, connected, candid community. Little did we imagine how choppy and unpredictable those seas would be, right? And yet, throughout this whole journey, I think it has shown us the power and importance of our connections with one another. So today we begin with a story. A farm boy accidentally overturned his wagon load of wheat on the road. The town preacher lived nearby and came over to investigate. "Hey, Willis," the preacher called, "forget your troubles for a while and come on and have supper with us. After we eat, I'll help you overturn the wagon." And Willis said, "Well, that's very nice of you, sir, but I don't think my dad would like it." And the preacher said, "Nonsense, son. Your dad would be happy we had some time together. Come on. It'll be fine." "Well, okay," the boy said, "but I'm still not sure my dad would like it." Well, after a hearty dinner, Willis thanked the preacher. "I do feel a lot better," he said, "but I'm still worried my dad is going to be real mad." "Don't be silly," said the preacher. "By the way, where is he? You're usually together." "Well, that's the thing," said Willis. "He's under the wagon." Well, we have to give the preacher credit for trying to make a personal connection with the boy. And that's what our topic is today, the idea of making connections. In his book, Unity of All Life, Reverend Eric Butterworth notes that the word religion stems from a Latin word that means to tie or to connect. Never one to mince words, Butterworth says, religions seem to have begun with an understanding of transcendent oneness with the infinite and with the goal of helping people discover their spiritual unity. In time, however, it seems that religions have lost the mission of unity and consequently failed to teach people about their wholeness and oneness. And then he says, this is really sad because the consciousness of spiritual unity is our very foundation of freedom and fulfillment. Actually, in 1891, the name Unity came to our co-founder, Charles Fillmore, after a time of meditation. The name carried a message of unity of all denominations, of science and religion, of God and humankind, and of the transcendent oneness, of all people. And the name became a symbol that said, beside the chaos of separation, conflict, and disunity, there is a spiritual connection based on love and understanding. And we know that Charles Fillmore wrote in Talks in Truth, "You are on this earth to be all that you can imagine God to be." So in their respective books, The Eye of the Storm, Embracing Conflict, Creating Peace, and The Eye of the Storm for Teens, Finding Peace in the Midst of Conflict, Unity ministers Reverend Gary and Jane Simmons guide us from our separation, from our fears and human excuses, to actual heart connections with one another. Jane Simmons writes, "You are here to be God's ambassador on this planet, to be an expression of love, to stand for peace, to make the difference in your life and the lives of all those around you. This is your spiritual mission, your divine mission." Now, in Unity we teach, and Mary worked it into her beautiful prayer, we teach that there is only one presence and one power in the universe, God the good. And as Dr. David Suzuki writes, every worldview describes a universe in which everything is connected with everything else. Stars, clouds, forests, oceans, and human beings are interconnected components of a single system in which nothing can exist in isolation. We are all part of a greater whole. Truly, we are one in spirit, created in divine goodness and wholeness. Now, building on this premise that we are all one, the Simmons make a claim that at first can seem a bit shocking, I think. And here's the claim. No one is against you. You have no adversary in your life. They say, make your path about discovering this truth, and you will discover what wholeness really is. Well, now, in our human skins, we often feel like lots of people and situations are against us, and some days we might feel like the whole world is against us, right? But this consciousness stems from the false belief that we are separate from God and one another. This thinking is an indication that we have temporarily forgotten our true identity and our divine purpose to serve as God's expressions. We can never truly be in opposition to another spirit because spirit is one. However, we can forget our divine identity, and when we do so, we often act out in fear and anger. The result is we hurt one another, we mistreat the planet, and we engage in all sorts of war. Jesus told us, seek first the kingdom of God and God's righteousness, and all things will be given to you as well. This kingdom of God about which Jesus speaks is in our own hearts. And no matter what happens on this outer plane, when we go within to that place of unconditional love and perfect peace, we respond to situations and people differently. When we align with the Christ of our being, we make all choices out of love, and then all good comes to us, and we freely and fully enjoy our human experience. There's a story about a man driving down a mountainous, winding road in his sports car. His convertible top is down, and he is enjoying the majesty of the moment. Suddenly, another car approaches, and the driver waves her hand out the window, and as she passes by, she points at the man and yells, "Pig!" Well, the man yells back, "If I'm a pig, you're a fool!" Then he angrily picks up speed as he flies around the next curve. Around the bend, he barely has time to slam on the brakes in order to avoid running into, guess what? A huge pig, you named it, a huge pig right in the middle of the narrow road. I love this story because it really exemplifies all human perception is incomplete. We misjudge and misinterpret based on what our senses tell us. How quickly we can let other people and situations distract us from the peace of our spiritual center. The Simmons call this center of calm and peace, the eye of the storm. And if you can see the books on the front table here, it's I, capital I, the personal pronoun I. Gary writes, at the center of the hurricane is its eye, a single theoretical point in space where the forces of the storm are in perfect equilibrium. At the eye, there is peace, calm, clarity, and stillness. The eye of the storm is your wholeness and spiritual essence. Now, at the circumference of the storm, the winds of confusion, misunderstanding, blame, and the need to be right can blow with devastating veracity. But at the center, there is only wholeness. We, every single one of us, can navigate all conflicts in our lives from our center, our divine essence, where we can release all assumptions and know that no one is truly against us. Reverend Jane tells the story of a knight who returned to his castle at nightfall, and he was a terrible mess. His armor was dented, his helmet was askew, his body covered with mud, blood, and bruises. The lord of the castle met him at the gate and asked, "What has befallen you, Sir Knight?" He replied, "Sir, I have been laboring in your service, robbing, burning, and pillaging your enemies to the west." "What?" asked the startled nobleman. "But I haven't got any enemies to the west." "Oh," said the knight after a pause, "well, I think you do now." So near the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tells us, "You have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemies. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. If you love only those who love you, what reward will you get? Do not even tax collectors do that? And if you greet only your own people, do not even the pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. Be perfect. It's a tall order, is it not? It sounds impossible. However, the word translated as perfect, as many of you know, does not mean without fault. It means whole and complete. To be perfect, we only have to center ourselves in the love we are and let it flow out easily into our lives and also into the lives of others, all others. So Reverend Ed Townley, Bible scholar Ed Townley, says that this particular message of Jesus about loving our enemies is really Jesus expanding one of his most basic teachings, that in order to be truly loving to all, to everyone, we have to release our tendency to judge others. Later in Matthew, Jesus will say, your enemies are members of your own household. I always wondered about that. Does that mean our enemies are our family members? But actually, metaphysically, it means your enemies are enemies in your own consciousness, in your own mind. Jane Simmons writes, as heirs of the Most High, we are commissioned to love where it is the most difficult to love. This reminds me that as a classroom teacher, I kept a little 3x5 index card that I'd heard this quote at a workshop, and every year I would rip that little index card off my old plan book and staple it to the front of my new one, and it read, remember, those who are the least lovable need your love the most. And that is so true. Jane Simmons writes, if you want to claim your true wholeness and worth, treat your perceived enemy as you would treat your beloved friend, and just see what happens. Everything in existence, she says, has a center. My center and your center, found within our hearts, can never oppose each other, because that is where we truly connect. Heads may battle, heads can battle, but hearts do not. In the Prayer Chaplain program, we practice going from our heads to our hearts. It's an 18-inch journey that Sig Paulson calls the most important journey of our lives. When we shift our consciousness from our intellect, where we engage in defining, analyzing, comparing, and judging, to the heart, the center of the Christ, we experience the presence of God and feel our divine connection with one another, no matter what may seem to separate us on the human plane. Feeling love for another human being opens our hearts, extends our energy field, and connects us with the other person. And as Charles Fillmore wrote, well over a century ago, love is the power that joins and binds us in divine harmony. Well, science today has proven Charles right. For over 25 years, a group of scientists from the nonprofit research organization called HeartMath have researched the electromagnetic fields associated with the heart. Okay, you scientists in the room are going to love this, okay? They have discovered that the heart embodies qualities of love, care, compassion, appreciation, kindness, and patience that can actually direct our brains, our intellect, I should say, and our actions. Also, the heart emits a measurable energy field extending out well beyond the body, and anyone who experiences that field of energy is actually affected by it. And you can see at the bottom of the slide here, negative feelings like fear and hate produce smaller magnetic fields, while heart-based feelings like love and compassion emit larger ones. And if you want to look this up for yourself, check it out on heartmath.com. So, Jane Simmons says, Jesus didn't talk about and teach the power of love so we could send out Valentine cards. He taught the power of love because it is a formula for transformation. Love means to accept and value. By moving to our center, the eye of the storm, where we can extend our energy field and rediscover that no person or situation is truly against us, we stay aligned in the truth of our being. And here's where it gets really interesting. In the presence of someone who you think might be against you or you might see as an enemy, think of that person as a mirror showing you where you are not connected to your wholeness. Now, this doesn't mean that you have the same negative qualities that a person might be exhibiting. It means that if you were living from and claiming your wholeness as Jesus did and modeled for us, you could never feel threatened or intimidated by another human being. You would not allow any other person to take away your love and peace. Jane says, the question is to ask yourself, what is the missing resource that would help me stay connected to who and what I really am? Is it self-confidence? Is it self-love? Is it discernment? Abraham Lincoln said, it is difficult to make a man miserable while he feels worthy himself and claims kindred to the great God who made him. Loving your enemy or anyone you seem to be in conflict with means valuing the person or situation for mirroring to you where you are not connected to your spiritual essence. Eric Butterworth wrote, other people can never upset us. We become upset because we are upsettable. It's all about our own consciousness. So when challenge appears in our lives, with the right attitude, we can find the blessing. And when we look for the gift, we will find the inner resources we've been missing, and we'll bring them forth, and that will help bring good forth. There's a story about two brothers who lived in adjoining properties. Now, because of a long-standing property dispute, they had not spoken for many, many years. So eventually, the older brother decided that he would build a tall fence so they couldn't even see each other. So he hired a traveling carpenter to build the fence, and he left on vacation while it was being built. Well, upon his return, his younger brother came running to meet him. Expecting a fight, he was amazed when his brother, with tears in his eyes, embraced him, saying, what you have done is such a symbol of love that I'm ashamed of all my past behavior. Please forgive me. Well, the elder brother was really confused until he looked ahead and saw that instead of the fence he had ordered, there stood a beautiful bridge linking their properties. Seeing this, he embraced his brother and also asked for forgiveness, and there was a joyous reunion. The brothers asked the carpenter to stay in town and bless others with his goodwill, but the carpenter said no, he needed to move on. There were other bridges that needed building. Jane Simmons asks, do we have fences that need to be dismantled in our lives? We are either the way of God or we are in the way of God. Building a bridge of understanding is the way of God. As Reverend David McCord from HeartMath tells us, we each have a spiritual heart. It is powerful. It changes us and it changes others. It changes the world around us. It is at those times in our lives when we experience pain, hurt, anger, and fear that we need to access our spiritual hearts. In other words, it's in our most difficult moments that we need to express our highest qualities of love, peace, power, and wisdom. There is an ultimate freedom in living and loving from our spiritual hearts. Brené Brown writes, actually calls this wholehearted living. I love that, wholehearted living. And she writes, wholehearted living is about living our lives from a place of worthiness. It means cultivating the courage, compassion, and connection, three of our C words, to wake up in the morning and think, no matter what gets done this day and what is left to be done, I am enough. I am more than enough. When this is our core belief, we will not be affected by others' criticism nor their praise. We will realize that others' negative opinions of us are usually about their own wounds and need and not the truth of us. We will refrain from thinking we know, like the preacher did, what's good for other people. We will also enter relationships and make heart connections based on our own worth and the worth of others. And so, as we come together today as a spiritual community, whether we're here in physicality or whether we're here in virtuality, I guess I would call it, it is through our spiritual hearts that we feel our love, connection, peace, and power. And it is through our heart connections that we take that love, compassion, peace, and power out into a world that really needs it right now. This is our divine mission, and so it is. God bless you, and have a wonderful week. And so now, what we usually do at the end of the message is recite our statement about the divine. Will you recite that with me, please? There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.